what in the world is happening in our children's schools, and what are we, God's people, going to do about it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it often takes kind of a breaking point situation for society to act or for God's people to act. With the horrific massacre in Newtown last year, those that were gun control advocates have used this as a platform. I'm not saying it's the right platform to use, but they've used this as a platform, and they're drawing a line in the sand. I use that as an example to say that sometimes we get to these breaking point situations, and often it's when it affects our kids, when it affects our children, that we can tolerate something and live with something. But when it affects our children, when it affects the schools, when it affects how our kids are being brought up, that's when we finally say, I've got to take a stand. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you today on The Line of Fire. It's Wednesday. Our focus is on the world, on moral and cultural issues. And as always, coming from our biblical kingdom perspective as we do. And I get regular updates from an organization based in Massachusetts called Mass Resistance. Obviously a play on Massachusetts, Mass Resistance. And they have been standing tirelessly for children, for schools, for families, for what is right in society. And things are now taking place in Massachusetts schools and bills in place or about to be implemented that cross a certain line. Now, for those that are listening, critics, and those that found out who my guest was going to be, so of course you're tuning in to listen, I am not comparing the slaughter of the children in Newtown, Connecticut, to the things we're going to talk about today. My point was, when folks get to a breaking point, it's often when it affects their kids. When folks get to a point where they say, okay, I've got to stand up and do something, it is when kids are affected. I'm speaking to many of you listening in Boston on WEZE, but others all over Massachusetts and greater New England. But wherever you're listening in America, this is relevant for you. Here's the number to call if you have questions, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And I want to get right to my guest, Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance. Brian, thanks for joining us on the air today.
It's great to be here.
Brian, we just have a minute before this first introductory segment is over, but can you tell us how long ago you started up Mass Resistance together with Amy Contrada? And was there one thing that motivated you to do what you're doing?
Well, interesting, back in 1993, the sex education in the schools. My kids were just in elementary school, and they had very aggressive and graphic sex education. And so we asked the local school board to let us, you know, see it first and pull our kids out if we wanted to. And they said, no, we're not going to. Mm. And so we gradually formed a group, a statewide group, and put it to the state legislature. And after years, maybe 3 years of trying, we got it passed, and it's still state law. Mm-hmm. And it sort of ballooned from that. Had the local school board said, yeah, we'll do this, maybe I wouldn't have ever done this.
Right.
But they were very hostile.
Yeah, amazingly. And these are your kids. They're going to subject your kids to certain things, and you've got no control over it. So this goes back 20 years. All right. Things have changed a lot. I want Brian to give us a sketch of what's happened in Massachusetts in the last couple of decades and what's happening now.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today, Brian Kammacher, he is one of the leaders of Mass Resistance based in Massachusetts. The website, massresistance.org. Get on their email list. They will keep you posted on things happening regionally and nationally. If you live anywhere in the greater New England area, be sure to get on their email list, massresistance.org. If you have a question for my guest or you want to challenge the viewpoint of myself or my guest, Brian Kammacher, 866-348-7884. Brian, I think it's really enlightening for our listeners to know that you didn't come at this as a born-again Christian and feel you had some spiritual mission. You're a Jewish man. You came at this as a concerned parent, feeling that you needed to do something, and you've really worked tirelessly. We all commend you and Amy for the tireless work that you do and being in the middle of so many difficult battles. But what's happened, if you can kind of summarize, give us a feel, what's happened in Massachusetts since marriage was redefined and same-sex so-called marriage became legal? Has it really had much of an impact on the schools and other aspects of the society?
Oh, yeah. It's had a huge impact. So big that we've put out a booklet, what same-sex marriage has done to Massachusetts. It's been going around, not only around the country, but around the world.
Yep.
As far away as South America and Australia and Canada and places like that, among most of the states, it's been considerable. Starting, of course, in the public schools. The public schools, according to the ruling of a federal judge, have to present homosexual same-sex marriage as equivalent to regular marriage. And this, gives a whole list of, so many other things that happen in the schools. The teachers can, bring their partners to school, and they completely present homosexual behavior as equivalent to normal behavior, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost hard to describe where else it's gone. We know of people that have, of course, gotten fired from their jobs for not disagreeing publicly with same-sex marriage. Businesses have to cater to the whole gay marriage agenda. You can be fined and punished for not doing so. I don't know how much time you have. I could go on our book, which you can read on our website.
Folks need to get the book. Right, massresistance.org, what same-sex marriage has done to Massachusetts.
You can download it for free or order copies. Adoption, the marriage licenses in Massachusetts now say partner A and partner B, not husband and wife.
Mm.
People can have, a gay couple can have a child's birth certificate changed to say that he has two mothers or two fathers.
Changed the birth certificate. Wow.
Right, right.
Has anything happened, say, with driver's license, if someone now identifies, they're born a male, but they now identify as female, can they get their driver's license or birth certificate changed?
Well, this is another thing, is right after gay marriage is the transgender movement. It just sort of follows it. And, yeah, in Massachusetts, you can have your driver's license, your sex changed on your driver's license. And that, brings a whole set of issues. A major Boston hospital threatened to fire, a senior physician when he objected to the hospital's involvement in the gay pride activities. He said that he didn't think it was appropriate and that there were, health issues and everything else. And they actually threatened to fire him. I've seen the letter. unless yes. he had
you know, actually, he called the program one day and told us about his situation, remarkably yeah. enough. Yep.
Yeah, and it's... it just goes on and on. In the legal profession, the Massachusetts bar exam now has questions on the knowledge of same-sex marriage law, and you know, family law. In most law firms, you now have to take seminars on specialized gay marriage law.
So you can't avoid it to pass the bar.
No,
you have to be expert.
You can't avoid it to pass the bar. And there was a big lawsuit about it where this guy didn't want to answer the questions and ended up failing the exam. And so it was established that you have to learn this stuff. And the Department of Social Services, deals with, families and things like that. They're in recent years, their parents of the year were two men married to each other that adopted a baby through the state's DSS services. Mm. I mean, it's just everywhere.
The fact is that a really good mommy is still not a daddy, and a really good daddy is still not a mommy. And the idea that there's no distinction between male and female, between mother and father, is just, it goes beyond absurd, Brian. You sometimes have to just shake your head and say, what's going on? So the latest issue now, as far as the transgender bill in schools, look, I have compassion for people who struggle. I can't imagine what it's like to be a man and feel I'm a woman trapped in a man's body or vice versa and live with certain torment. I'm sympathetic to that. Whatever we can do to help people like that find wholeness from the inside out, we want to do it. But of course, that's not the way society is going. It's basically normalizing transgenderism. And if it's just based on your feeling, your perception, that becomes the reality. So what's happening with this school bill now in Massachusetts?
Well, in November of 2011, after years of trying, they were able to get this transgender rights bill through the legislature. And we warned people that this would change the public schools radically. And, you know, people weren't listening. They said, oh, well, it's a bathroom bill, blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about public accommodations. Well, it ended up passing with the public accommodations taken out, but the school stuff still in. And last week, the Massachusetts state education officials in the Department of Secondary and Elementary Education released this document. Basically, here are the directives on following this law. And it is unbelievable. I mean, if a boy thinks he wants to be a girl, he can dress as a girl in the schools. He can play on the girls' sports team. He can use the girls' locker rooms and changing facilities. And the schools, have to not only go along with it, but they have to, give diversity training to anybody who might not want to go along with it. And the schools, will work to, using a name of the, and pronouns of the different sex to this person. And most of this can happen without the parents' knowledge or consent. You can get a clergyman or a friend or a school employee to vouch for the fact that this person thinks he's the opposite sex, and that's good enough. We did a whole long article because there's a lot more to this directive on our website, massresistance.org. And this goes through all of the, kindergarten through grade 12. And so they are willing to deal with this with kids as young as kindergarten. They're very aggressive, at least this directive is, of making sure that that everybody goes along with this, and there's no tolerance at all for students being discomforted by this. And in fact,
it reminds me, Brian. Let me just say this, then we'll just stay a few more minutes and continue on this on the other side of the break. There was a case in the Denver, Colorado area where an 8-year-old was coming back to school. Everyone knew the kid as a boy. He'd been away for a year. He's coming back to school as a girl. and would be addressed as the girl, the whole deal, use the girl's bathroom, locker room. Teachers would have to use female pronouns, called by the girl's name. That's how the other students had to relate to the kid. They said, but counseling will be available for students or teachers that have a problem with this. I'm thinking, they're not the ones that need the counseling. The one that needs the counseling is this poor, confused 8-year-old that really needs help. Friends, if we don't stand up and do something, who do we have to blame? Activists are fighting for what they feel is right. They'll do it passionately. They believe in this. If we don't stand up, if you don't stand up where you live, who will?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, Brian Kammacher from massresistance.org. Please go to the website, sign up for their email list, get the booklet, buy a copy of it, What Same-Sex Marriage Did to Massachusetts, the effect of same-sex marriage on Massachusetts. Brian, we've had the beginning of a dialogue about this via email, but I want to bring it out in public here. Many Christians are kind of conflicted about how to address these issues because they're always thinking, I want to reach out to people with love. I want to win them to the Lord. I want to help them see what I believe. I want to be gentle. I want to follow the example of Jesus, and I don't want to offend people. So if I take a stand on these issues, then I may offend people, I may drive them away, and hey, I'm not perfect anyway. So they have this conflict, and I think that's why some shy away from the public square or any type of confrontation. From your viewpoint, you want to be a civil guy. You're a nice guy, you're not out to hurt anyone, but you're just looking at right and wrong. You're just looking at issues with kids. So just speak candidly. I've got a ton of Christian listeners right now. A lot of them have kids in schools. Speak to us candidly about what we need to do, and if we don't do something, where things are going.
Well, that's an interesting question. My own sense is that from a biblical perspective, that God would have us deal with these things differently as something between man and his fellow, and something between man and someone who wants to subvert society's morals. I mean, I think there's over and over and over again in Scripture, people who want to destroy society, destroy and cause immorality. There is a whole different set of standards, just as there is in war and in civil society. Somebody can go out and kill people in a war, such as World War II, where my father-in-law fought in the Battle of the Bulge, but this isn't the kind of behavior that you would have if you have an argument with somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think that people have to understand is that this movement is trying to subvert our culture and our children and much else. And you have, you know, biblically, you have to deal with it differently. And I think that the first thing is the truth. You cannot subvert the truth. You have to say to these people, you know, what you're doing is destructive. What you're doing is hurting yourselves and hurting others, and not be afraid to say that. And that's where I think mass resistance tries to, make a difference, is by saying, here is the truth. Mm-hmm. And we're willing to, you know, discuss whether it is the truth or not. And if it's not, then we'll fix it. But I think that, you know, you can't worry about offending people who are essentially out to destroy themselves and destroy society. What is your sense of that?
Well, I think you really highlight the issue that we're not just doing this because we don't like someone or we differ with what a neighbor is doing in the privacy of his or her bedroom. That's none of our business unless they're breaking the law. But we are talking about something that is trying to change our society, that is the principal threat to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and freedom of conscience. And we can be civil, We can be gracious. We don't have to be screaming, yelling. We're not going to be using, you know, violence and those kinds of things. We can be civil, but we've got to take stands. And from a biblical perspective, you could say that that's part of our prophetic calling, and that's a heritage that we would both share, coming from our different perspectives on Scripture, that there is that prophetic role. And then Jesus said to his followers, you're the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Part of that means you're to be the moral conscience of the society. And I agree. I think sometimes we're just too concerned about offending people. We say, okay, look, I don't want to offend someone, but we got a whole generation of kids that's being affected. Who's going to stand up for them? So, Brian, if folks go to your website, and I'm going to post more reminders on Facebook and Twitter for folks to go there, what will they find? It's a great source for me, and we're always encouraged by what you're doing. But if they go to massresistance.org, what will they find there?
Well, you will see a lot of documentation and reporting on a number of subjects. One of them is the homosexual agenda with kids, what they're actually doing with kids, what they're actually giving kids, what they actually do with kids at their events, where we've been there and videoed much of it, some of it that's in public places. And here is what's really happening. And also a lot of analysis, for instance, with this transgender law, a huge analysis of what it's really doing and what it really says and how it's really going to affect you. And also what you can do. We work with people all across the country and even in other countries to help them confront their legislators, to help them spread the truth, and to help them change things. And so we basically help people fight back. And, you know, it's sort of interesting. I mean, I can remember in my own kids' high school when they had a homosexual event, the Day of Silence. And every year we would come up and explain to the principal why we didn't think it was a good idea, and the principal would pat us on the head and say thank you and then just do it. And then One year we got about a dozen parents who were angry, and they said, you are not going to push this perversion on our kids, and we're not standing for it. And they screamed at her, and it stopped. And, you know, every success that we've had from the very beginning with the Parents' Rights Bill passing both houses of the legislature and being signed by the governor happened from angry people. And unfortunately, that's often what it takes. If I can tell you so many horrible stories of what's happened to kids when they've gone into these gay clubs that it would just make you cry.
Well, tell you what, Brian, if you can stay on another couple of minutes, let's just continue this conversation. And I would say, friends, the word says, be angry and sin not. You can take that righteous indignation and then channel it in a right way and say, okay, we're not going to act because we have to act. We have a moral responsibility. We did something crazy last week. We're doing something crazy again this week. This is where it all started in public for me, 2007. My lecture series at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, backed by a half-page ad in the Charlotte Observer that cost $7,500 that was miraculously provided for. It's six DVDs, Homosexuality, the Church and Society, starting with what the Bible says about the issues, fact or fiction, and then is there really a gay agenda, and what the church can learn from the gay and lesbian community. I ended up getting called out a few days later by the president of the world's largest gay activist organization just because of this lecture series. It's normally $60. You can get that today. Plus my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. With postage, it's well over $90. Today, $40 postage paid. So the lecture series that kind of started it all, Homosexuality, the Church and Society, plus A Queer Thing Happened to America, more than $90 of material, just $40 postage paid, available by phone only. Please call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. 9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. Be sure to visit massresistance.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, Brian Kamenker, is one of the co-leaders of Mass Resistance, the website massresistance.org. They are based in Massachusetts. They're responsible for helping get major legislation to protect children in schools from various sexual curriculum. They have stood for what is right tirelessly for years. They helped in New York, tried to deal with the debacle there where four Republican senators congressmen caved in and made some pathetic compromise so that same-sex so-called marriage was passed in New York State. Again, the website massresistance.org. And what got Brian started on this is when his own kids were in school in 93 and he saw some of the sex ed curriculum and found out that he wasn't allowed to do anything about it. Couldn't even see it first and decide if he wanted to pull his kids out or not. That's what got him involved. If you have a question for me or for my guest, 866-34-TRUTH. Brian, for those who were listening right before the break, you mentioned horror stories of what happens in schools with what are called GSAs, gay-straight alliances, which started in high schools, which I'm sure they're in college campuses as well, but in high schools, and then now they're in middle schools as well, which would mean, let's say a kid 12 years old decides that he or she is same-sex attracted. That's how they want to identify. They can go into one of these gay-straight alliances under faculty supervision, be around peers, be around older faculty and staff, and talk about their sexuality, get encouragement in it, without their parents knowing. And the faculty or staff could say, hey, look, you don't want to talk to your parents about this if they're Christian or if they believe the Bible, they're not going to agree with this. And they can do all that without parental consent. First, is that an accurate description, Brian? And then second, you mentioned some horror stories of things you've heard. Let's hear about it. We need to know these things.
Well, first of all, yes, it is accurate. In fact, we have a bill before the legislature now that would require parental consent. But it goes a little farther than that. What happens is that when you have these kids in school, and it's all over the place where kids, you know, feel odd or they don't, you know how it is with teenagers. They feel like they don't fit in or something like that.
Sure.
These clubs and these people will come to them and say, well, the reason that you don't fit in is because you're really gay. And come with us and this is who you really are. And they'll encourage them to come out. And they will, you know, end up downtown with, you know, and all these just horrible events. They will end up getting, like all kinds of paraphernalia, such as condoms for homosexual sex, things like that, which we've seen being given out, and it draws these kids into these things. And what we've seen, and we've seen this a lot, where you know kids who are just these troubled kids will get drawn into these behaviors, and they'll come home. I know one woman who we worked with. Her daughter came home and said, you know, I'm a lesbian and we hate you. You know, we hate your Christian values and I have a girlfriend and everything else. And it was just, you know, it was very, very devastating and horrible. And she said, this is who I am and don't try to stop me. And how it happened was that she was a very troubled young girl and her guidance counselor was also head of the gay club. And so she took on this lesbian identity, and her mother ended up removing her from the school and taking her to a school in another state, a Christian school. And, well, guess what happened? She graduated from that school, came back, is married to a guy, has a baby, and has forgotten all about being a lesbian. And you know, it's just this, you know, and they got married in their church and she's, you know, just couldn't be happier.
So she was confused, as many young people are, about their sexuality. Instead of getting to talk to mom and dad about it, they talked to maybe a gay faculty member without parental knowledge or consent, perhaps in the school where your kid goes.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Brian Kamenker from massresistance.org. Go to the website, find out what they're doing. You'll go there today, you'll be shocked by the picture, then you realize, oh, that's actually a man dressed as a woman. Again, I've got compassion for those who struggle with these issues and are convinced they're a man trapped in a woman's body, vice versa. I can't imagine the torment that some have gone through. I understand many have been suicidal over it. I'm convinced the best solution is from the inside out. I was just sent a link from an article on Huffington Post, 10 things I wished I'd known when I started my transition, meaning transitioning from male to female or female to male, as the case would be. And one quote from the article, 2 years and 4,860 pills later, I now realize how little I actually understood back then. The youngest candidate for sex change surgery in England was actually a young man. And Brian, I'm not sure if you followed this one, but a young man in England started going through hormonal therapy, just a teenager, and starts to grow breasts and you know, all of the other things that are going to happen now through the hormones. He's getting ready for sex change surgery, and he realizes he made a terrible mistake. He realizes he's really not a girl, so he's off the hormones and wants to join the army. The poor, confused kid. And I know some would say, well, I'm much more at home now that I've gone through this transition. The fact is, many are not. And bottom line, that person will never be fully the opposite sex anyway. And yet this is now normalized, Brian. This is now, it's not just a matter of don't bully a gay kid in school. It's not just a matter of you have to accept two mommies, two daddies in a home. It's gone beyond that. It's now you must embrace as perfectly normal. Johnny is now Jane, and 7-year-old Johnny is using the girls' bathroom and the girls' locker room, and you just have to accept it. Maybe next year he'll be Johnny again, but this year he's Jane, and that's the new norm that we're supposed to embrace. And is there even the possibility that you could have, say, a man who's, let's say, he's a 50-year-old man and wants to work in preschool, and he's going to come to preschool wearing a dress, and he's visibly a man, and you will not be allowed to not hire the person? Is that coming our way?
Oh, it's already in Massachusetts. I mean, the state law is very clear on employment and gender identity. And that's another thing that we fought, because we said specifically this will happen in the schools. Mm. And it did happen a few years ago before the law came in, where they had a guy teaching the first grade who started wearing a dress, and it also happened in my hometown in the school where my daughter had gone to kindergarten, where in the third grade the guy started wearing a dress, the teacher, and one of the women, one of the mothers, was so distraught that she pulled her child completely out of the school because the school said, you don't have any right to challenge this. And it's not coming. It's already here.
Yep.
And, you know, it's very destructive from so many levels. It's destructive from these young kids who don't, you know, we don't know how it affects them psychologically in the long run. It's destructive for the people doing it because they really need help. As you pointed out, that lifestyle tends to, you know, be more suicidal, have just run into more and more problems. It's considered by the mental health profession as gender identity disorder, and it's considered an official disorder. These people really need help. They don't need activists, you know, pushing it more into them. And it's just generally it's nonsense. I mean, a person is always the sex that he or she started. You cannot change that.
And the idea of changing the birth certificate, you know, well, hang on, that's the way you were born. It's not what you perceive. And it puts us in a situation, Brian, where really you can't say when the kid's born or when you see the baby in the ultrasound, it's a boy, it's a girl. What you have to say is the packaging is male, but we don't really know if the kid is male or female. And I don't say this to trivialize people's struggles, but we've got a few people struggling, you know, a tiny percentage of the society, and we're supposed to now completely change everything. I was going flying into San Diego the other day, and I got to the airport. I went to use the men's room, and I looked, and there's men's rooms, women's room, and I wonder, you know, how long does that just stay like that? You know, when are you going to have men, women, gender neutral at every airport? When I go to fill out a form
now, you already have to have that in the schools in Massachusetts. You have to have a gender-neutral bathroom for someone who's not comfortable in either of them. So yes, it's madness. It's coming to that too, and you know, people have to confront it. It's just absolute lunacy.
The more that it happens, the more people get used to it, which is a great danger. And Brian, let me say this last thing, and I appreciate you staying on, taking some extra time for us today. If folks go to your website, they'll be shocked. And it's not because you are just looking for the one crazy extreme out there and you're somehow fixated on it. I mean, that's the crazy thing. You expose something perverse and people call you perverse. You're saying, folks, wake up. Wait, this is happening. These are your kids marching in this parade, and look at the surroundings. This is happening in your school. Hey, this is just what was taught in the seminar. So if people get offended, they shouldn't get offended with what they see there. Of course, you'll always be discreet with what's actually displayed. They should get offended that these things are happening in society. So Brian, we'll continue to point folks your way, especially in Massachusetts and New England. Keep up the fight. You encourage many just by being steadfast in what you do. Thank you, Brian.
Well, thank you so much, and it's great to be back on the show.
All right. All the best to you, sir. MassResistance.org. Let me take a call from... I've got a few things I want to talk about, but let me get to Lloyd in Mount Vernon, New York. Thank you, sir, for calling the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I'm here listening to the conversation, and, you know, of all the adjectives that you use, boy, I mean, it's really, really insane. It is ludicrous. It's crazy. You know?
What else can we say? It's not, we want to make this plain. If someone is struggling with their sexual identity, we're not saying, man, you're crazy. What we're saying is crazy is to now normalize that so that everybody else has to get counseling. Rather than saying, okay, we want to help you. No, we're going to normalize that. You know what I liken it to? I liken it to a school where you've got one deaf kid. So because you have a deaf kid, no one is allowed to talk and everything has to be done in sign language. Rather than saying, hey, let's do what we can to reach out to this deaf kid and help him in this environment. No, instead, everyone else is going to have to make that the norm. It's very troubling, Lloyd. And
yeah, this is a case of extremism, you know, from one extreme to the next. You want to accommodate other people, but at the same time, you're unaccommodating others. It's absolutely crazy because you're saying they are standing up for what they want, but when we stand up for what we don't want, they become offended. What about the right to stand up for what you don't care for? The same way they're standing up for what they care for.
Right, and if we press it again, we're not just talking about, you know, being nice to other kids. Every parent should teach your kids be nice to other kids. And if some kid seems awkward or different, or others don't pay attention to that kid, you be their friend and you bring them over for a meal, and let's reach out to their family. Yeah, that's what we should be modeling and teaching. If you got lesbian neighbors, have them over for dinner, and if they go away somewhere, offer to cut their grass when they're away. We're going to be Christian. We're going to demonstrate the love of God. At the same time, we're not going to normalize this insanity and say, okay, we know you're uncomfortable with Johnny using the girls' bathroom and changing in the girls' locker room. We know you're uncomfortable, but we'll counsel you. No. Johnny is going to have to get the counseling and the help because it's normal for boys to be boys and girls to be girls. Hey, Lloyd, thank you, sir, for calling and, yeah, just raising your voice and saying it's crazy. Let me say this one other thing, friends. There's a line to the effect that every abortion mill should have a sign in front of it saying open by permission of the local church. Open by permission of the local church. It's the same thing with what's happening in our schools. These things are happening in our schools by permission of the local church. Look, many have not put their kids in Christian school. Many have not homeschooled. In other words, our kids, a lot of our kids are in public schools. We need to understand what's happening and then get involved. If enough of us get involved with firmness, with love, but absolutely not backing down from the truth, things will change.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There was a caller, didn't want to come on the air, but asked the question, is someone born homosexual, someone born gay? Number one, there is no reputable scientific evidence that anyone is born homosexual. The best that can be indicated is that someone may have a predisposition to homosexuality and that in certain environmental conditions would then be more likely to develop a homosexual identity. But there is no reputable science that anyone is born homosexual, which is why there's still research being done to try to understand the causes. The best answer overall is we don't know why some people develop homosexual identity. We have factors we can point to that seem to happen in environment, lifestyle, upbringing, many common denominators, but they don't work for all. So we don't know in every case. We can identify certain cases, but we don't know in every case. Even if it could be demonstrated that someone was born homosexual, that has no makes no statement in terms of the morality or rightness of it. Scientists talk about an obesity gene. Do we have fat pride parades because of that, or do we help those people all the more deal with obesity? Some scientists claim there's a ruthless gene or a violent gene or adulterous gene, all of which proves nothing in terms of the morality of the behavior. We just mean that person, if such genes existed, has to work harder to control those behaviors. So we don't judge the morality of something, even if it was, quote, inborn and innate. But there's no scientific reputable evidence that homosexuality is. 866-348-7884. Before I go back to the phones, I got an insightful email question from a gentleman named Luther. And he said, I was watching a debate on C-SPAN about same-sex marriage between Andrew Koppelman and Sheriff Gerges, the latter giving a secular stance for traditional marriage. As you know, the Supreme Court is voting it again on this in the spring. It will be the vote the first time. Koppelman had said, there's a huge generational divide on this. People between the ages of 18 and 29 in this country, 73% of them want or are in support of redefining marriage. So Luther asked me, do you believe that since so many young people support same-sex marriage or are in favor of it, do you believe it's directly caused by the older generation's failure to articulate these traditional ideas? And other question, are we living in the twilight of a dying worldview? When I asked him his thoughts, he said, I'm not sure it's caused by the older generation's failure to articulate these ideas. The problem is more fundamental, I think. He said they never actually understood the ideas to begin with. Generation Xers grew up in the midst of the sexual revolution, so what we're seeing now is simply its long-term consequences. If you manage to uproot the moral convictions of an entire generation, then unless you replant them, the resulting generations will just keep decaying in terms of their moral convictions. Absolutely. 100%. That's part of the problem. Since 1970, from 1970 to today, 12 times more couples cohabit, live together out of wedlock. 12 times. That's 1,200% increase from 1970. Moral approval of kids being born out of wedlock and sex out of wedlock is off the charts compared to what it would have been in early 1960, and on and on and on. So there's been a general moral decline. This is part of it. Also, the influence of the media. which aggressively normalizes and celebrates homosexuality, bisexuality, and now even transgenderism. Also, much compromise in the church. We're ultimately to blame in terms of our compromise. We have not set godly examples in our marriages and families sufficient to withstand the tide of the sexual revolution. And we haven't preached a bold, clear gospel message without compromise. And to the extent we've been identified as being political, we've also been lacking power in the spirit, so that the younger generation has basically not really had a fresh encounter with the living God. And without that, that spells doom. That spells a real problem of massive backsliding. The solution is awakening in the church on a wholesale level. Let me go to Brooklyn, Vladimir in Brooklyn, New York. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Michael? How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
I actually wanted to make a comment on something that you had said earlier about Christians feeling that they shouldn't confront it due to the fact that they will be unloving.
Yeah, if we take certain stands, are we going to turn people away? Are we going to seem unloving? Will we seem unchrist-like? Maybe we shouldn't take a public stand, and they often wrestle with that.
I can understand that, but the problem that I have with that is I believe that if we don't take a stand on it, that ultimately would be the unloving thing to do.
Yeah,
due to the fact that when you read the Gospels, Christ, who was the epitome of love and the example that we all draw from, he did not consider it to be unloving when it came down to confronting people with their sins. You know, he considered it to be the most loving thing that they can do, so that they can have a chance to repent, receive salvation, and enter God's kingdom. So if we don't mirror that, how in the world can we call what we do loving? I personally believe it's not. I think what you're saying is correct, but I also believe it's more so cowardice on our part.
Often it is. Many Christians are confused on it, but often it's cowardice. Often it's just an excuse for saving our own lives, saving our own reputations, avoiding conflict. My friend Lou Engel has urged pastors, okay, you don't want to fan the gay couple that started coming to your church. I understand that, but you got a million kids in your city being affected in the schools. What are you going to do about it? Hey, Vladimir, I wish I had more time to talk, but I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you, sir, for the call. Keep listening and calling. I've often quoted the words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer: the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. We are doing something we never did before. It's similar to something very unusual we did last week, and I want to do it again, but even step it up a little today. The DVD lecture series that kind of pushed me forward in a much more prominent public way and these issues was done in 2007. God laid on my heart to do a 5-night lecture series before the Human Rights Campaign had their fundraising dinner in Charlotte. Our budget for these types of things, Standing for Righteousness, the city, was $9,000 at that point for the year. The Human Rights Campaign budget then was $35 million, probably over $45 million. And yet, just our lecture series at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center for 5 nights on homosexuality, the church, and society got me called out in front of 1,200 or 1,300 people at their fundraising dinner the next night by the head of the Human Rights Campaign, publicly challenged me in my absence there, but we have it all on tape. This is what kicked it all off, and this is what has been opening people's eyes for years. Homosexuality, the Church and Society, it's 6 DVDs. It's somewhere 10, 12 hours of material. It's normally $60, and then my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, Essential Reading. You get them together with postage, over $90. Today, postage paid, just $40. Get the DVD series that started it all and the book that remains more relevant than the day it was published. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, when you have a chance, go look in the mirror and ask yourself a question. If I don't stand up for what is right, then who will? Yeah, I know it looks like the world is going haywire, but fear not, we'll bring you moral sanity and spiritual clarity right here today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, I want to encourage you today that you can stand up and make a difference. I want to encourage you today that things do not have to descend into moral chaos where you live. I want to encourage you today that one person, one family, one group standing up for righteousness can make a massive difference. And for the most part, that's who God works with, one or two or a small group that are determined to bring about change. And from there, things spread. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. I decided right before the show to take you into an interview that took place earlier this week. Today's Wednesday. We focus on the world, on moral cultural issues on Wednesdays. For those that are new to us or don't know our schedule, Monday, that's our day of musings. In other words, could be anything. I could be talking about a Bible verse. I could be talking about something that happened in world news. I could be talking about Israel. Monday, whatever's on our heart after the weekend. Tuesday, we focus on teaching, Bible, doctrine, theology, apologetics. Yesterday, we focused on the biblical question of how much authority does the devil have. Wednesdays, the world, moral, cultural issues. Thursday is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And then Friday is You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers. We don't have a catchy thing that alliterates with Friday, but it was already known as You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers. That's what we do on a weekly basis. Our focus today on the world, Wednesday. On Monday of this week, I was on an interview with an ultra-liberal host, very much pro-gay activism host. The first time I was on with him, I was in my office. It was just a few minutes before the sound check for our radio program. I didn't know who he was at all. He began to ask me some questions that, as far as I could tell, were just absolute non-serious questions. When was talking about marriage in America and gay activists trying to change it. He wanted proof that there was some kind of document that defined marriage as between a man and a woman in American history. What was the document? I said, well, going to any place to get married, there is bride and groom. I mean, that's the way it's always been before gay activists changed it in some states. And the question seemed so absurd. I'm looking at the clock. I had to get ready for sound check. I said, hey, I thought this was going to be a serious interview, but I'm out of here. I actually cut it short, which I don't know that I've ever done that before, but the thing was so absurd, I couldn't take it seriously. Well, he asked me to come on again, and this time have dialogue with a gay activist, Wayne Besson. We pray for Wayne. He's a Jewish gay activist, and he needs the Lord. And he's accused me of all kinds of crazy stuff, and I'm trying to spark some violent conflict with the gay community. I mean, real sad stuff. And you read the stuff, your heart goes out to him. So David asked if I'd have dialogue with him in light of some things I'd written. So David hosted that fairly. We did that. The way it was posted online was obviously going to be biased, but even so, we were able to get our message out clearly. And I did apologize for cutting the first interview short. I thought, not professional, shouldn't have done that, as absurd as the thing was, and even though it was getting close to our sound check time. Well, he asked me to come on again to talk about an article I had written on townhall.com. saying it's not time to throw in the towel. Yeah, gay activists have made all kinds of progress, but it's not time to throw in the towel. Why in the world would we? We do what's right because it's right. He asked me to come on again. I thought, well, I'm going to do it. I know a lot of this is a setup for his particular line of questioning. He's going to try to paint me in a certain way, but let's do it. So we did that on Monday. It was a Skype radio interview. If you're on my Facebook page or follow me on Twitter, you got notified about it. But I'm going to play some excerpts from it. I think you'll find it enlightening. We'll be back.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Again, I want to encourage you, you can make a difference. Look, I have certain platforms. I can be on radio. I can write articles that a lot of people read online. I can write books. I can preach in different settings. I have certain doors that are open to me. But I also want to tell you, some of those doors are open because I've been faithful in smaller things and faithful perhaps one-on-one speaking to someone, telling the truth. And the most important work is often done one-on-one and out of the spotlight and away from the radio microphone and with no one watching. Moms, dads, students, individuals, teachers, educators, workers, whoever you are, great grandmas, you can make a difference if you'll be faithful to the Lord in the sphere in which you find yourself. 866-348-7884. Before I take you into the interview on Monday with David Pakman, let me grab a phone call. Michael in Houston, Texas, thanks so much for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello, this is Michael Fernandez.
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Okay, I support you 100%. Keep doing the good work. And I know it's just limited in time. I have my own TV ministry. I'm an evangelist. I myself was delivered from transsexuality. And the answer to all the homosexuals, this is what Jesus did for me. He showed me how to answer to all homosexuals. Not all are abused. Not all of them are being abused or coerced into that lifestyle. Some, let me explain. Romans 5:12, Jesus told me to answer the homosexual this answer. Because of one man, who's Adam. Because of one man, Adam, he ushered the whole human race into the kingdom of darkness. But because of that problem, all man is born into the kingdom of Satan. Their spirit is separated, alienated, and destined to hell. But the second Adam came to bring us back into the kingdom of God. But because we're born into the kingdom of Satan, because of Adam, not God, Adam, because of him, all the human race is born to sin. You do not have to teach a child to lie or cheat. Why? Mm-hmm. Because their nature, their spirit is dead, separate. Their physical, spirit, soul, and body, it has sin. Because if that's the reason why homosexuals are born with these desires, because your father is the devil, but you can be born again through the second Adam, Jesus Christ. Jesus.
All right, so Michael, just to be clear, when you say that homosexuals born we're born in sin, your father's the devil, you're saying that about every human being,
every human being,
heterosexual, homosexual. Born in sin,
yes.
we all need forgiveness through the cross, and change can only come. So, Michael, let me just ask you this real quick. I'm sure you have a whole testimony that can be shared that must be powerful, but you said that you were delivered from transsexuality. Did you actually identify as a woman or just cross-dressed during that time of your life?
Well, my reason why is that I advise all grandmas and grandpas, don't dress your kids up as little girls because you want a granddaughter, because you affect the child's mind.
That's what happened with you?
And when you do that, you will usher evil spirits and you change the identity of the human being that God created you to be. God never made a homosexual. He made man. Man ushered us into the kingdom of darkness, which is Adam. He's the cause of the reason why people were born with perversion, with adultery, fornication, liar, cheater, or homosexual desires. Not all homosexuals are born with these desires. Just like, because some are molested, some are perverted, some are coarse, some try to deceive themselves good. Now, when you open the doors to an evil spirit, you open the doors. Even Jesus said, this child who was possessed was born this way, because it was possessed in child. But why? Because our spirit man is dead. We're alienated. Our DNA, before we got saved, is the fruits of the spirit, fruits of the flesh.
Yeah, and again, just to jump in, Michael, because obviously I've got a preacher on the phone with me here, a lot to say. So whatever it is that's going on in our lives, whether the person is a habitual liar, whether the person fights obsessive fear, whether the person has a perverse sexual desire, whether the person is some out-of-control heterosexual, this is rooted and the sinful nature of human beings. And when we open the door to these things, that it opens the door to demonic influence and things like that.
Amen.
So
Amen.
So that the same answer for one is the same answer for the other. It's the gospel of Jesus. Hey, Michael, I've got to run, but if folks want to hear more about your testimony,
remember,
what's your website?
The answer to all these scientists is because of sin. It corrupted our DNA. It corrupted our spirit, man.
Got it. Yeah. All clear.
That's why we're different sexes. God bless you. Look at my website. My testimony's on there. I'm supporting you. Keep the good work.
All right. Thank you. Friends, that's MF, as in Michael Fernandez, MFMinistries.net. I don't know that Michael and I have ever met, but thank you for the call and telling it like it is. Again, please hear what Michael was saying. Whatever the sin is, whatever the behavior is, whatever the tendency is, it's all part of being fallen human beings, A, and B, we can open the door to the devil, evil spirits, demonic things, and then we get more messed up. Whatever the behavior, whatever the attitude is that is contrary to God's intent. All right, so I'm with David Pakman, ultra-liberal, pro-gay activist host. This is on Monday. I want to just play some excerpts for you.
Michael, you had this interesting article in townhall.com called "Is It Time to Throw in the Towel?" And you really outline, I would argue, as well as I or anybody else I know could, the case for why the movement and activism against what I think is inevitable full marriage equality is happening. And you question, kind of tongue-in-cheek, whether the right wing should throw in the towel. But then you say, no, even in spite of all these things, public opinion and even Newt Gingrich announcing his belief that same-sex unions are inevitable, you say it is not time to throw in the towel. Why not, in spite of all these factors?
Yeah, David, it's not a personal battle to start. You know, we can talk about the culture wars and use words like battle and stuff, but for me, it's never been a personal battle. It's been a matter of doing what is right, what I understand is right and best. Obviously, my faith fuels everything I do, my faith in Jesus and Scripture. So I oppose two men marrying or two women marrying because I believe it's wrong. I believe it's in the worst interest of society, children, families, and contrary to God's will. If society shifted in such a way that same-sex marriage was the law of the land, I'd still say it's wrong, and I would still work for what I feel is right. So to me, it's not a matter of pragmatism, nor can I go by what polls say. I mean, polls shift left and right, and polls don't determine morality either. But for me, this is not a surprise. In other words, the progress of the, quote, gay rights movement, so it's not a surprise to me that the handwriting's been on the wall for many years, I think.
What will some of the people that are so focused, I mean, we talk to people who it just seems their entire lives are obsessed with, you know, what men and primarily men, even though sometimes they'll talk about lesbians, what men do in their private lives, et cetera, and et cetera. Brian Fisher, you know, all the guys, the former Navy chaplain, Gordon Klingenschmidt, and the Westboro Baptist Church and National Organization for Marriage. What are they going to do when this thing is over? I mean, will they move on to abortion and I don't know, women's rights? Or a lot of these people are the ones that years ago were against racial integration. Now they're against marriage equality. What's the next thing for that group?
Yeah, well, obviously I can't speak for others. I would completely put Westboro Baptist Church outside of any pale of the Christian faith and would not relate them to any of those ministries you just mentioned. And I relate to the folks like Billy Graham who are on the right side of racial equality and paid Martin Luther King's bail to get him out of jail when he was arrested. But I believe actually that some of these ministries are going to have more to do than they've ever done, because from what I can perceive, David, the gay activist side will not be content to simply win a victory. They want opposition to be removed. They want it to be basically improper or even illegal for us to vocally stand against certain things. We're seeing this more and more.
I think
and more.
They just want equality. I think it's just about equality.
Well, I know that's how you would perceive it, but here's an example.
Yeah.
There's a pastor at a church in Florida, a black pastor, after President Obama comes out supporting same-sex marriage last year. This pastor preaches a message in his church, which meets at a public high school. You know, they pay rent there, explaining why he doesn't believe in these things. And there's an effort from the local government to get him booted out of the high school saying right. We don't stand for these things. So this is becoming more and more common.
Yeah, but Michael, when I cited a name of various individuals, you said, well, the Westboro Baptist Church, I would say, is kind of not part of really this movement. So in the same way, your one anecdotal story is not really, that doesn't really mean much, does it?
All right, so we'll come back to my response to David Pakman, who was suggesting that I'm giving one anecdotal story. Well, first, it's a brief interview. We're only going to have about 10 minutes, but I wrote a whole book with a whole chapter of a 700-page book dealing with one example after another, after another, after another, where gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and freedom of conscience. And at the end of that long chapter, I said I could have made the chapter the whole length of the book. That's why we stand up for what's right. And if you stand up for what's right, where you are, you can bring about change. You can be the one where the buck stops with you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I don't live with a sense of despair and hopelessness. How can I? Jesus is Lord. This kingdom is advancing around the world. Even if we see a personal loss, someone that we knew backslid or something like that, or we see unjust legislation passed somewhere, those are sad things, but I'm not going to be in despair. Jesus is Lord. The kingdom of God is advancing. The gates of hell can't prevail against it. And ultimately, every knee will bow before him and every tongue confess. When we see people do the wrong thing and triumph, we should feel bad for them. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm taking you into the interview I did with ultra-liberal radio host David Pakman, as he's asking me about his mind, the inevitable progression of, quote, gay rights. So he says, look, you can give an anecdote about freedom of religion being taken away. It's just one anecdote. So this is the midst of our discussion.
Oh, no, it's not one anecdotal story. It's dozens, it's scores, it's hundreds. In fact, if you'll just check with organizations like the Alliance Defending Freedom or Liberty Council, they'll give you lists and lists and lists of people that contact them.
But those are incredibly anti-gay agenda-based organizations. Why would we go to them for information?
They're fine legal organizations with fine people. I know some of the folks involved, and they're upstanding individuals. But here, I could give you example after example. I have a whole chapter in A Queer Thing Happened to America, where I detail people who lost jobs, who were put out of schools simply because they didn't support homosexual activism. Look, I have a friend and colleague of mine who was booted out of jobs that he was doing because he wrote a book in his private time, not even mentioning the Bible, simply saying why same-sex marriage was not good for society. And he was booted out of other jobs he had completely unrelated to that.
Dr. Brown, I want to ask you this, because what we're really getting to, I think, is just a really something that is coming up a lot when we talk about equality debates. And I hope you'll take this question seriously, Dr. Brown. As for myself, as a straight man,
this is great.
I find it really hard to imagine being so fixated and obsessed on gay and lesbian people that I devote so much of my time to talking about how bad it is and being so against it. It's hard to imagine that, and it's happened with many people, and we get emails that somebody like you, who is so outspoken about this, may not just be gay yourself. Can you address that? And it's a totally serious question, because we've got 20, 30, 40 outspoken male anti-gay activists who have come out as gay, or politicians. What do you think?
Well, I think that's their issue. I mean, as someone that's been heterosexual from the first moment of any sexual romantic thoughts and has never had to deal with a homosexual thought in my life, the more I hear those things, the more it makes me wonder, what's going on in that person's life? You know, I've got gay activists that constantly focus on what I write. Does that mean that they like me secretly? Or perhaps because you take a certain stand on these issues, I should assume that you're a closet conservative Christian. I mean, it's such a bizarre way of thinking. But when I read those pathetic thoughts, I think, what's going on with these people? Don't they have something better to do? And for me, look, I've written 22 books. One of them was devoted exclusively to the subject of homosexuality.
Right.
And if you follow my ministry around the world, 99% of my preaching, teaching around the world doesn't even touch on this. The fact is, these things came knocking at my door, my issues with the activism. And by the way, I didn't know that you were straight, but I'll take your word for it. No argument on it. I wonder why you fixate on these issues so much, though, because any interview you've asked me on has been on this subject.
Well, all the pitches that we get from your booking service are related to this subject. So you should talk to them. You're being pitched by special guests as a gay marriage, anti-gay marriage guest. So that sounds like your issue with your booking service. That has nothing to do with me.
That's fine, but I'm happy to discuss other issues with you. But as far as I know, no one pitched this. You just contacted me, correct?
Yeah, well, we already had a relationship. You wrote an article in Town Hall about it. So again, you were putting yourself out there. This is the article you wrote. We're talking about your article.
Absolutely, and I stand by it. And David, let me say this plainly. My issue is with activism.
Right.
This came knocking at our door. And we get the emails, the requests, issues with parents, things going on in schools. Look, to me, it's wrong when there's a preschool here in Charlotte where the teacher can't address the kids and boys as boys and girls. She has to call them friends because you can't make gender distinctions.
Well, that sounds like quite a thing. But so that's interesting because you reacted almost like you were surprised that I am straight. But you kind of say you're not going to argue with me as what? What is that an implication of, that you're not going to argue with the fact that I'm straight? What does that mean? What were you implying there,
doctor? I take your
word
for it that you have no reason to say it, and it's silly to dispute it. That's why.
Okay.
Very simple. And it, you know.
But who was disputing?
But you have to understand, David, the more I see people saying you must be some closet homosexual, the more that disqualifies any credibility that those people have.
I don't know that anybody has said that. I just was hoping to get you to address
it. It comes up all the time. Okay. It's a constant mocking thing. I get the emails from the people. I see the posts and comments that are sent to me.
So a lot of people think you're gay?
No.
Oh. I thought you just said that you get posts all the time from people saying you're gay.
It's the standard gay argument that when someone opposes these things, they must have some private issue, which is really a pathetic thing. Can't someone understand that I have an issue with two men marrying or two women marrying? Can't someone understand that the world's best mommy is not a good daddy?
Huh.
Can't people understand that there are biblical convictions that say God made us a certain way for a certain reason? Is that, you may differ, but is that so hard to understand?
All right. Well, you've heard it from the man himself, Dr. Michael Brown. AskDrBrown.org is the website. Check out his nationally syndicated daily talk radio program, The Line of Fire.
All right, and it is The Line of Fire right now. So that was a classic, just a classic interview with every imaginable thing coming up. And I knew where David was coming from, but you never quite know what's going to come up. And I played it for you also to say, hey, there's a way to respond with grace and speak the truth in love. And if folks are going to say outlandish things, well, let's just turn the tables so that they understand the absurdity of it. I also play that to say, that's my setting. God made me to do certain things and has equipped me, and I'm comfortable in that setting. You've got your own settings. You're working there with your coworkers at the bank. You're there in the construction company. You're part of the homeschool network in your town. You're there over at the nursery. There are a whole bunch of things where God's just placed you. You're there, a student in the school, just got out of school and driving home now. You can make a difference. I'm going to be speaking at Charlotte Christian School tomorrow, 11 o'clock, about some really important issues in society. And those kids, they can all make a difference. We're building on the crazy thing we did last week and taking it one step further. The series, the DVD series that got things started here in Charlotte, my 6-DVD series, Homosexuality, the Church and Society, starting with a thorough biblical discussion of what the Bible really says about these issues, separating fact from fiction, then talking through what's happening in society, eye-opening lectures at the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. We went, where everyone was running from this, we went public with it. The lecture series that started this all, it's only $60. If you add in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, Essential Reading, you're over $90 plus postage. Today, $40 postage paid. What do you think of that? $40 postage paid, the entire DVD series, plus the book. This is a special offer by phone only, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Can I give you that number one more time? 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I know the mentality. I know the mentality. What can I do? There's just so many problems in society and so many needs, and it's overwhelming. What can I do? I mean, you read headline news about violence in Chicago. What are we going to do? How do you stop that? Abortion, still a million babies being aborted a year. And then just the steady stream of marriage, family decline, moral decline, family decline, the sexual revolution of the 60s until today. What are we going to do in the bombardment from the media? Well, we can do something. Every one of us can do something. And if we do, God will work through us. And we can make a difference. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Hey, do you have a testimony of something that's happened in your school, in your city, your community, where one person did something and got some results? Maybe you should encourage others. Last week, we spoke about what was happening in Philadelphia with a big billboard advertising adultery. Thou shalt not commit adultery. The not was crossed out, and it was a link to a dating website, but especially for older men who were going to basically hire a woman, younger woman, to be theirs, college student, that kind of thing, and pay the girl's tuition or pay her a few thousand dollars a month to be with him and do whatever. And the shocking thing was, is one Christian man called, he said, I haven't heard anything about this. I'm not hearing about this in the news, not hearing about this in the churches. And shouldn't we be talking about it? Because it's very prominent. He said he was just driving by it when he called. Well, I've got on the air with me today Loretta Graham. She is the spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Family Coalition. She is a lifelong Catholic, been married for 41 years, has worked with Richard Panzer, founder of Free Teens, as an abstinence educator and teen leadership trainer, among many other things. Loretta, thanks for joining us today. We don't have Loretta. We got Loretta on the line, but that did not sound like Loretta to me. That sounded like a dial tone. You see, after many, many years of doing radio, and thousands of hours of radio and countless hundreds or thousands of calls, I've developed a very, very keen ear. And with my keen ear, I was able to recognize within seconds that that was a dial tone and not our guest. Yeah, I know. You're impressed. Like, Mike Brown, how do you do that? And you know Hebrew too. Yeah, I know. All right, just having a little fun with you. We're going to try to get Loretta back on the phone because here she is. She's a grandma with 12 grandkids. And she's saying, you know, we got to talk about moral decline. We got to talk about family decline, breakup of families. We've got to talk about the immorality that's rampant in our society. And we can make a difference as we do. As I said last hour, I want to say it again. No reason to be discouraged. You say, yeah, but I listen to your show and sometimes you tell me real bad stuff happened. Yeah, yeah. God reigns. God is king. Jesus is Lord. The word is true. The day will come when the earth is filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the seas. Jesus will return and establish his kingdom. We know that's going to happen. And we know for us, there's always hope for the righteous. Always, always, always. In fact, Proverbs 4 tells us that the path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, getting brighter and brighter until the full brightness of the day. That's our path as God's people, no matter what's happening in society. Right, we've got Loretta Graham back on the phone. She'll be joining us right after the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, my guest, Loretta Graham, spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Family Coalition. She's been married to her husband for 41 years, her husband Donald. They have 6 kids and 12 grandkids. I wonder if that number is going to get higher with the grandkids. And she's been involved, career spanning 50 years as poet, children's book, and writing children's books and prayers for classmates in religions class all the way back to West Catholic Girls High. Loretta, thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Hey, Loretta, let me ask you an honest question. I'm about to turn 58. I feel very young, full of energy, full of vitality. Yeah. Obviously, you're a little older. You got 12 grandkids. Why are you still on the front lines of this? Why don't you
You really made me sound very ancient.
Well, married 41 years.
You said you're 58. I'm putting it out there. I'm 62. I just had my birthday last Wednesday.
Well, congratulations. You're on the front lines,
alive.
Loretta. You haven't backed away. You haven't said society's going to hell in a handbasket. Let's give up. How come you're still up there on the front lines?
Oh, because Jesus just gives me energy, you know, to encourage. Really. That's what...
And 62's young. Hey, in my book, 62's young.
He encourages me.
Uh-huh.
Pardon me?
So tell me about the Pennsylvania Family Coalition.
Yes, we are a grassroots organization. We've been in existence for 25, 30 years, actually.
All right.
And we work with people of all faiths and all ethnic, you know, backgrounds. And the purpose of that is to strengthen marriages and families through biblical, principle-centered educational programs and, you know, to model public policy and to just work with, you know, through action and inspire cultures and to serve others. And we just had our national, did you ever hear of this, National Marriage USA? That was last week.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it.
That was a whole national coalition to promote marriage between a man and a woman, to talk about how marriage, you know, strengthens society, helps children really grow and prosper. In fact, it helps society prosper. You know, it helps
right. So
community.
So when you have solid marriages and yeah. kids raised in solid homes, it's going to have an effect on the economy. It's going to have an effect on criminality. It's going to have effect on all these other aspects, because this is the basic nucleus of society is the family. Absolutely. And when that gets torn up, everything else gets torn up, correct?
Yes, marriage increases, you know, the likelihood that fathers and mothers have a good relationship with their children. You know, married couples are more likely to enjoy, or children actually, enjoy stability in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stability, and that's really important for everybody.
Yeah, Loretta, when you saw this billboard went up, "Thou shalt
yeah.
commit adultery," and here it is at a major thoroughfare in Philly, did you find that other Christians were concerned about this, or did people just kind of yawn, like, "Hey, we're used to this. What's the big deal? That's the world."
Yeah, I think at first, I know it happened to me. You're driving, you know, 50 miles an hour. You look up and it says, "Thou shalt," and you see "not cross down" and "committed." You think it's some sort of mistake. You think it's a joke. You know, I mean, so
yep,
that's
yep.
the first thing when people drive by.
Right.
And
thou shalt commit adultery?
By,
what? Yeah, go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, right. It's like, what? And then, it's, you know, first it's almost like, what? It's almost like funny. I don't think people realize what it really is. And it has arrangements.com under there. And it's a young girl. And then, you know, as you're driving, you're saying, because I drove further up, and that's where I saw it again somewhere. And I said, this is not funny. This is something serious. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, talking to pastors, and even my own pastor didn't know anything about it. But further down the radio dial, a young man has another radio program that really speaks the truth. And he actually began to ask people to donate money. And he's actually putting up the Ten Commandments on billboards. On
really?
Has one already up there, the Sixth Commandment. Hello, what's that? Thou shalt not commit adultery. You know, that's one way to counteract. You know, that's one way not to, to stop or just to drive by and just say, oh, what's the use? No, put up the truth.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So, and there's no... There's no law against us putting up Ten Commandments on a billboard, correct?
That's right. In fact, it's encouraged.
Somehow we think we can't do anything. And you're saying, well, of course we can. And
right.
You say, well, what difference is that going to make? It makes a difference. Just imagine how many people drive by. Thousands of people in a day, tens of thousands, who knows location and rush hour traffic. You have locations in some major cities where, you know, going in and out of a tunnel, a million people are going to see something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have one of the Ten Commandments there, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery.
Right.
I'm sure that would speak to people. I'm sure people would be repenting. I'm sure someone's going to be driving on their way to an adulterous affair and would see that.
Mm.
And would instead call their pastor and say, I got to come clean here. Yeah, it's not that hard. So Loretta, as a mom, grandmother, as an educator in different ways through your books and so on, just give a word of encouragement to others out there that they don't have to be professional family organization people, that everybody can make a difference. Just give them a word of encouragement from your heart.
Well, you know, I just believe the Lord is number one. He says, I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no strange gods before me. And again, this young man is collecting money, and he actually is putting the first commandment up as well. You know, God is not, he does not want to be our judge. You know, he wants to be, he is our Father. Hello? You know, he loves us. His mercy endures forever. You're right. You know, someone can repent when they see the Sixth Commandment up there. Wow. You know, I'm on my way. You know, some people are having affairs just over the Internet. They're not doing anything physical, but they are, you know, they're taking themselves away from their relationship through the Internet, and they're thinking that that's okay. But it's not okay. Because you have to give your spouse, you know, your whole self, your whole body, your whole soul, you know, your whole life, your time, your energy. And if you're putting your energy in all these other different places, you're not being faithful. You are still committing adultery.
Mm.
You know,
yeah,
it's
the truth.
That.
It's the truth.
We live in this technical age where everybody's texting and it's all over the place. But no, we have to be still. You know, there's a place of stillness within a marriage, within a family. My husband and I do, you know, centering prayer. We take time to do that. You know, we've been all over the place. I do my thing, and you know, he's done his thing. But now, you know, we're both here all together every day.
Yeah, hey, let me ask you one last question, Loretta, before you go.
Yeah.
You've got a book coming out next month. The
ABC. It's out. It's on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Lord
the ABCs of matrimony and sex.
Oh, well, then, yeah, well, that's the one I'm writing currently.
Okay, but the ABZs,
all
right, the ABZs of sanity is ready out. The ABZs of sanity, inspired by life on life's terms. The book's been embraced by people in the recovery community, those who care. All right, hey, Loretta, thanks for joining us on the air. I appreciate it.
Thank
Loretta
you.
Graham.
Great on Amazon. And thank you, Dr. Brown. It was a pleasure being on your show.
You bet. Loretta Graham, spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Family Coalition. And the book we just mentioned, The ABZs of Sanity, available on Amazon. All right, look, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question. If you were just taken out of the world today, aside from maybe your immediate family, what would be the negative impact? In other words, what would be the loss? See, if you're a real prayer warrior and you're taken out of society today, we'd feel that difference. If you were one of those that was reaching out to lost and hurting people, and now you're taken out, we'd feel that difference. If you were one raising your voice, standing for righteousness, we'd feel that difference. Can I tell you that we are on the air today through the faithful support of our torchbearers who give faithfully month in, month out, and through the faithful backing of some businessmen who have been blessed by God over the years and have so generously, especially to help launch us on the air. In other words, here's someone taking money. Some families don't have a lot of money, but every month sending faithfully $25 or $50 as torchbearers, and they're the backbone of what we do. And then here's another businessman blessed by God and saying, hey, I want to sow into this. This is not a financial appeal now. I'm making a point. And as they're giving money, they're helping us do something. If you pulled them out, if they disappeared, we'd feel it in a massive way. We couldn't even be talking to you right now. You should be making a difference somehow. You should be making a difference that if you were pulled out, there would be an absence, there would be a void. Don't underestimate what God could do through you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Wednesday, we focus on the world on moral and cultural issues. And there's a testimony, I don't know how many times people have sent it to me. I'm glad to keep receiving it because that means people are reading it. It's the testimony of a woman that was published in Christianity Today, and she has a book. A woman who was a radical lesbian and quite happy being a lesbian from her own description. She was a tenured English professor at Syracuse University. She was a complete skeptic of the gospel, committed lesbian relationship. Her academic specialty was queer theory. Rosaria Champagne Butterfield. Today, she's mother of four, homemaker, and wife of a Presbyterian pastor named Kent. So just 14 years ago, she was a radical lesbian, self-described radical lesbian feminist, and now a committed follower of Jesus, married to a Presbyterian pastor. Now, why am I sharing this with you? Because somebody reached out to her. Because somebody cared for her. Because somebody prayed for her. Her book is The Secret Thoughts of an Unlikely Convert, an English Professor's Journey into Christian Faith. Hey, Matt, we should get her on the air to talk about this if she is doing radio interviews. She says this because look, it's a pastor who reached out to her and who broke with her stereotype. There's a woman, godly woman that Nancy and I know, a former lesbian, worked for years with Focus on the Family, now has her own ministry outside of that. And when she got saved, she started going to a church with her lesbian partner back then, and they were older Christians, you know, men, jackets and ties, women in their dresses. It wasn't some hip, mod, young people's church. So all the more you think she shows up with another woman, how are they going to react? They just loved on them. And this gal got wonderfully saved and is now a leader in ministry. Well, somebody reached out to Rosaria. See, that's the point I want to make. You don't know who you're reaching. When you're sharing the gospel with someone, you don't know what's going to happen in that person's life. When you share your testimony with a coworker, you don't know how God's going to use that coworker. Or you don't know the ripple effect of you being bold, how it encourages someone else to be bold. You really don't know. When I spoke at the home church in which I was saved, it was many years later. The church had gone from its original location in Queens, New York, and then moved to Oceanside, then ultimately to Island Park, where I grew up, born in New York City, Manhattan, grew up on Long Island, and moved back to the town where I grew up. So it was just minutes from where I'd done all kinds of crazy, stupid, sinful things, shot dope and huffed diesel gas and broke into a local doctor's office, just all kinds of crazy stuff I did. And I came in there with a stack of newsletters from our missionaries around the world. And I presented them to this one brother who by then was probably around 80, who had patiently prayed for me when other friends, young people were witnessing to me, friends of his daughter were witnessing to me. And he'd come several times a week, bring us to church service. We used to go to church services 5 nights a week. And before any of us drove, he would drive us. And I'd bring down some of my drums, and we'd set up my drums to play along with the piano player and a couple others in the church, and just put up with my folly. And his name was Rudy, Brother Rudy, we called him. And I gave him a stack of all these newsletters. And I said, these are our missionaries around the world. I said, man, you sharing this reward because you patiently prayed for me and you helped lead me to Jesus. And you answered my questions when I was a new believer. You sharing this reward. And I had a stack of books I had written, not to boast about me, but to say, hey, by God's grace, I've been able to have a certain impact and stand up for Jewish ministry and reach Jewish people with the gospel and stand up for righteousness in society and help be part of revival in other settings. And those of you who prayed for me way back then when I was this wild, crazy, lost teenager, full of sin, full of the devil, the first church service I ever attended, a young lady who knew me from high school, in fact, friend Brother Rudy's middle daughter, wrote down in her diary, Antichrist comes to church. That's the reputation I had. And I said, hey, when you prayed for me, when you witnessed me, when I got saved, you had no idea that God would graciously do these things. And of course, it's 100% a testimony of his grace. It's all him. Any good that's come out of my life is his grace at work. But please hear me, friends. You don't know the difference you make when you take extra time with your kid one day and pour the love of God into them and show them godly discipline. Husbands, you don't know the difference that you make when you get involved with your wife when she's going through a hard time and show that you're really there and you pray things through together. You really don't know the implications. You don't know what happens as a teacher at school when you stand up and say, sorry, I can't teach this. It's wrong. That may just spark a moral revolution. You never know. So be obedient. What's that old saying? Find out what God would have you do and do that little well. For what is great and what is small, 'tis only God can tell. Isn't it a Jesus principle? Be faithful in little, he'll make you faithful in much. Be faithful in that which belongs to someone else, he'll give you something of your own. Be faithful with earthly treasures, he'll give you the spiritual treasures. I want to share one thing with you. As God laid it on our hearts in Charlotte 2004, 2005, to stand for righteousness and to speak out against wrong things that were happening in society, I felt prompted to do a 5-night lecture series on homosexuality, the church, and society. Listen, we didn't have a dime to do it. I shared this last hour, repeat it. Our budget for that part of our ministry, Standing for Righteousness, that year was $9,000. The previous year is 2006. Now 2007, I feel, to rent the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center, do a 5-night lecture series, to do that, videotape the whole thing, was going to be $25,000 budget with advertising, so on. We had $1,000 basically towards it. We did that. We confronted an organization with a budget of $35 million, spoke the truth in love. I did this lecture series for 5 nights, Homosexuality, the Church, and Society, right before the Human Rights Campaign, the largest gay activist organization, came to Charlotte. They had their banquet on a Saturday. I did the lectures Monday through Friday. And sure enough, the head of the organization at their fundraising banquet with 1,200, 1,300 people backed by all the big companies in Charlotte, the biggest companies, calls me out by name. We got it on tape. I wasn't there. Calls me out by name and challenges me. Just because we did this lecture series. This is the lecture series that started it all. You'll find it eye-opening, riveting, starting with what Scripture says to what the church can learn from the gay and lesbian community. Is there really a gay agenda? To corporate America, eye-opening. 6 DVDs. It normally sells for $60 plus postage. We did something special last week. We're doing it this week with this series. The 6 DVDs plus my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, should be over $90 with postage. Instead, $40 postage paid, but available only by phone. So call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. 9978. Take advantage of this offer. My bottom line today, don't say God can't use me. I'm unknown. I'm insignificant. I'm nobody. No, that's exactly who God is looking for.